You're listening to the Ohio Conference Cast, where we explore topics related to the workings of Ohio Conference. Here are your hosts, Bill Seymour and Thomas Dunn.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Ohio Conference Cast. I'm Bill Seymour.
And this is Thomas Dunn. And today's guest is Terry Hsu. Welcome back, Terry.
Good to be here. Thanks.
You all know Terry Hsu as the Executive Assistant Director for Leadership Something Development.
Let me try USA, that. Right? Director of Leadership Development for Mennonite Church USA.
All right. That sounds good. And fellow wearer of cool socks. I'm looking over at Terry's socks, and they're bright and colorful, as are mine.
My Thomas, socks not so much. Are bland.
Yeah.
Yes.
Tells you everything you need to know.
Stop the podcast now.
That's right.
So we have Terry back on just because he is a wealth of information. He's a denominational leader, and so we just figure it's always good to pick his brain a little bit. And so we've got a number of topics we want to circle around here. Bill, where do we want to start?
Well, let's start about the big announcement. So Irvin Stutzman is going to retire.
Yes.
And we're jealous and happy for him, right?
I'm ready for retirement. Yeah.
You're like 22 years old. What are you talking about? So how does that affect your position and just MCUSA in general?
Well, I have a lot of respect for Irvin. I always have. I am honored to call him a friend as well as my supervisor. And it was really Irvin's position and in that role as executive director that convinced me to get on board with the denomination in this role, and been honored to serve with him for these going on 8 years. Irvin will turn 65 in April. He had hoped and thought that he would go to 66 and lead the denomination back to Kansas City in 19 for the convention. He's going to be retiring a little bit before that. It has, as many of those of you who follow some denominational news, it's been a long 6 years or 8 years for Irvin, and it's really taken a toll on him. He's a great guy, but he's just wearing down, ready to turn it over to somebody else.
So I wonder, you know, they always do after presidents, after their second term, they do a before and after picture. I wonder if any of those exist of Irvin. You know?
That would be interesting.
Right, yeah. I remember seeing the Obama picture in his inauguration too.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I would imagine there's some similarities there because it takes a toll on you. And he's been there about 8 years and he has markedly less energy than when we started. And he's always been Energizer Bunny. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, he's ready for somebody else to take leadership, which I'm glad he came to that point instead of crashing and burning. And,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's that process look like? What's the actual resignation date?
Sometime in April, and he has some flexibility to the board of when that handoff will be, so it's not a date set.
We're recording in May here, so about 11 more months out.
Right, okay. Right, yeah. And the executive board of Mennonite Church USA is the one that hires the executive director, and they are in the process now of establishing a search committee, similar to what a church does or a college does when they're looking for a president. It will be a national search. There will be a process of clarifying what are the needs, what are the skill sets that are needed in that person for the next chapter forward. And that's all kind of part of the work of the board to determine and to listen to the constituents in terms of who are they going to look for? How are they going to discern who God has for this position?
So with Irvin on the way out and an unknown person coming in at some point, what does that do for your position?
Well, like I said, I've been honored to serve Irvin and the church in this role, as any associate pastor would with a new lead pastor. There's always a question of would there be an alignment that would be workable. And this role, the executive director has always been given the opportunity to clean house. So I have no promises of having a job, if you will, past Irvin's time. So in a year, and that would feel very different if I had college children at home, you know, and but we're at a different stage now, and I'm pretty okay with that and just kind of wait and see.
Yeah, so not certain, but not anxious either.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of two men, Ralph and Cliff, in Ohio Conference, that would be happy to find employment for you.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and we have a pastor peer that you could attend again.
Okay, yeah.
Just saying.
Just let us plan your life out here. Give us the green light. We'll take care of you.
That might be getting out of the frying pan into the fire.
Well, you know, we're all frying pans.
You know this fire well enough.
Yeah, that's right.
You're good. So that's good, and we'll have to keep that in prayerful discernment as you guys do that as Ohio Conference. It'll certainly have an effect on all of us, so we'll pray God's wisdom in that process. But let's take a step forward, I guess, still into the future, but not 11 months into the future. We have the Future Church Summit coming up.
Right.
And we know you're up to your ears in that one, so what are you working on now, and what are your thoughts on that?
Well, we just had a planning meeting yesterday, four of us, the consultant and three of us as staff, pulling together different pieces of that, what it will look like, how we can facilitate it in the large group of several thousand people, because parts of it will be open in the exhibit hall as we create a timeline of the last 100 years of Mennonites in North America. Okay, so we will be looking at a timeline and creating one with just about everybody at Orlando, and that won't happen in the delegate setting or the Future Church Summit meeting. It'll happen in the hallways as people write down things in different decades as a way of building this timeline. So the logistics of that we're talking about, there's a lot of logistics that go into working with a group of people to discern, be 700 to 800 people that'll be a part of the Future Church Summit, and to be able to listen to what they're saying around. The big question is discerning how are we going to, as Anabaptists, follow Jesus in the 21st century.
Okay, let's back up a little bit. So the Future Church Summit, one piece of it is everybody who's there in the building.
At Orlando.
At convention. Orlando. Maybe not including Mickey and Donald, although. So you're going to kind of group think a timeline or a history of...
That'll be just kind of an open walk by, oh, this happened in 1960.
Okay, so when, so what kind of, are we talking when my great uncle Levi married Aunt Martha, or
no, things that affected Mennonite Church USA, or
my Martha knew how to make pie.
Okay, there you go. Write it down.
Yeah. Okay, so things that affected the broader group.
Yeah, and that were going on in the culture that we were in.
Right. So obviously, this is more than MCUSA because we're only 15.
Right.
So we're looking at all the Mennonite threads in North America, in the U.S.
Preceding denominations.
We're only 15 what?
Years old as a denomination, MCUSA.
Right.
It's our anniversary, Thomas. Come on, get on board.
Happy
it's
anniversary.
Time to party.
Yes.
So that's one piece of it, and that's going to try and include everybody, at least everybody comfortable with technology or whatever.
Well, that will just be handwritten on a wall.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Handwritten on a wall. That's huge. It'll be a number of different sections. There'll be another section that will be open in the exhibit halls that will let people respond to an appreciative inquiry question of when were you most connected to Mennonite Church USA, or when are we at at our best as Mennonites?
So that's an MCUSA specific question. So really just the last 15 years.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. And that's based on appreciative inquiry concept of articulating when are we at our best.
The idea being, let's identify when we were at our best and maybe duplicate it or even make it better. Find ways to
keep
bring that
happening.
Back.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. The other parts will be specifically for those people that are signed up for the Future Church Summit. Will be delegates and other invited guests. Okay. And those are being nominated by constituency groups, agencies, and a few of them are being invited by self-nomination, approved by the design team.
Self-nomination. Okay, so the anxiety words in there are constituency, self-nomination, and invited guests, right? Yeah. That must be a really hard process.
Well, most of them come from the agencies.
Okay. So like agencies meaning Mission Network.
We have five agencies, and those agencies are given the opportunity to say, we think these stakeholders are important. We'd like them to be at the table. We've determined how many persons each agency can represent. We've also broadened it out to other groups that we'd like to listen to. So we've invited all the persons who are doing ministry inquiry to come to the table. We've opened that door in different ways that will have people that will come besides the delegates to increase the voice.
Right.
Because one of the realities is the delegates are disproportionately old and white.
Right.
Compared
right.
to our church.
Right.
Right. So this is a way to try to broaden that voice to have a better representation.
So this seems like it's a pretty important thing.
Well, we don't
church summit.
We hope it is. We don't want to overstate it, but it's been referred to as when Harold Bender wrote the Anabaptist vision. This is a way for listening what's and capturing the vision that God has for us as Anabaptists today,
right.
moving forward. But it's coming from the bottom up instead of the top down. It's not coming out of the academy. It's not coming out of the executive staff. It's coming from the church as broadly as we can do it.
So then, what's the process for then what happens with the information? So mm-hmm. the Anabaptist vision was a nice little pamphlet people could pick up and read.
Mm-hmm.
What's the process for this?
Well, all of the information from the table group discussion will be collected through iPads at every table, tied into one system, a closed system. That's a theme team will condense that and put it on the screen, so there'll be almost immediate recognition of what table groups said as it's synthesized through a group of 10 people or so. Then we just set a meeting today in August for August, the week. Second week in August, to get together and try to synthesize what this means for us as we move forward in the next biennium and beyond.
Hmm. Wow.
So there'd probably be multi-tiered communications going on. Probably.
Oh, yeah.
Written materials,
yeah.
Emails.
Right.
Is there plans for like a big exhaustive something? I know what's the name I'm looking for? Carnegie did something like that
a couple years ago, he did a survey of pastors.
Okay.
I don't know how exhaustive that will get. Mm-hmm. I mean, one way that it's important, if it is documented in something like that, that would resemble a book. Another way, if it gets condensed down into a vision statement that can be remembered and recited and articulated, that continues to guide us.
Mm-hmm.
So both of those, I think, would be very strong possibilities. I don't know what's going to come out of it.
So how does Irvin's retirement affect the summit?
Well, we talked about that.
It wouldn't be just about Irvin, right?
If
any executive.
Yeah. Right, yeah. The fear is that the internal energy that it takes for an institution like Mennonite Church USA to get a new leader mm-hmm. like Irvin takes a lot of institutional energy and focus. Mm-hmm. And our hope and prayer is that while that's going on, we still give the energy required to the importance of what comes out of the Future Church Summit.
Right, right.
Right, that we'll have to do both of them together. And the opportunity of that is that when a new person's in place, we'll be able to hand to that new leader, this is where we're going.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
And I'm sure it will be instrumental in the search committee as they're having those conversations with potential candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And that, in a lot of ways, that's very similar to where Ohio Conference is at, just a different scale, obviously. But, you know, we have in our budget that we passed at ACA, we opened up for a halftime leader. And at the same, so we want to fill that void with someone that can really push us forward missionally.
Mm-hmm.
But it's tough for leadership team to try to look for that person, that right fit, but yet keep this direction moving forward after ACA
right.
at the same time. So
it's similar.
It's a very similar,
yeah.
smaller scale, but yeah.
Right. So we'll be glad to add our voice if you want some help. We'll do a podcast and offer it free to our denomination if that'll, you know, push along
sure.
that energy button.
Bill will do that. I think I'll be unavailable in August. No,
that's right.
We can wait till November.
Other agenda, huh?
Somebody's getting married.
Well, we're not going to end with that.
I think that's a perfect ending. Ba, 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 ba. No, because it's not, hopefully not your last podcast. Well, maybe. No. It could be. It's possible.
Actually, August I could do.
Oh, well.
July is when right. I'm completely out of the loop.
So, Terry, is there anything else that's new going on with MCUSA or Executive Board?
Well, one of the things that I communicated with the conference ministers this past week that has created some conversation is the result of a Executive Board decision really over the last 6 months that was articulated at our most recent Executive Board meeting a couple weeks ago, was that the board is realizing the way that we're structured and the diversity that we have, that the Executive Board is going to focus nationally more on resources and relationships and less on regulations. And what that means in terms of practicality is that the Executive Board is not going to spend nearly as much energy trying to regulate what area conferences are doing around areas of credentialing and such, because the Executive Board, number one, isn't structured in a way to be able to reinforce those regulations. Mm-hmm. Can't do anything about it, what that means. And conferences are moving independently in that way. So the board has recognized that areas like credentialing have always been held in the authority of conferences, and the Executive Board said, we want to honor that and let conferences do that discernment while we focus on providing vision, resources, and relationships for the whole denomination. And as I led then a conversation with conference ministers and Irvin just a couple days ago, it was one that all of the conference ministers from across the breadth of positions realized, yes, that's true. That is already stating what has been recognized coming from the national office.
So then, I guess the first question in my head, and I don't know, just the first question in my head that someone might be thinking is, so who is going to watch over conferences if Executive Board is not?
Well, that question would need to be dissected, and I don't know what it means or has ever meant to watch over the conferences. Well, right. They've been as like independent. They've been as independent as everybody in your own congregation is independent, mm-hmm. even while they're members,
right.
in terms of what they do and don't do.
Right.
And so just like congregations in Ohio Conference have very different understandings of what it means for members in their congregations, so too do we in Mennonite Church USA have conferences that are different in what they look at in terms of being faithful. So this shift is not away from our teaching positions that are in our confession of faith. It's just an acknowledgement that the reality is conferences are doing that. We acknowledge that. We look at the authority conferences have in their own context to do that discerning, even while we continue to articulate our own positions as a denomination, mm-hmm. and use that as the not only the teaching position, but just the statement of faith that we have in our confession of faith.
Right.
So as I think, I don't want this question to sound cynical, but I'll just throw it out there.
Well,
so
that mine did. Why can't yours?
Well, someone else has to be the nice guy here. You know,
oh, okay. Right? Yeah, that's right.
So my question, what is the real change here, right? Because you didn't really regulate those before. When I say you, I mean the Executive Board. There wasn't really regulation. So is it really just a change in acknowledging that we don't have regulation and that we're not going to invest energy into it? Is
right.
It's more an internal shift, and we're just going to communicate this internal shift is happening.
Right. It's acknowledgement of the fact
yeah.
of what was there. If you recall, several years ago, the executive board said, we will not recognize Theta's licensing. And they spent a number of trips. And I think, Bill, you were on one from Ohio Conference going out there. Executive board did several trips like that to see what was going on and to urge them to get back and kind of in line with our teaching positions. And the position now is the denomination can be clear about what our stances are, but we acknowledge, as in the forbearance document, that not every conference is there or every congregation's there.
So how does that trickle then? So with conferences, you're not going to look at credentialing. Does that have an effect on the other agencies then? I mean, is that, how does that influence, say, our educational wing of MCUSA? Is there any regulation? Has there been any regulation there? And will, is that kind of a, the same mantra carry over to all the different agencies?
Well, it doesn't have the connection through the credentialing process, but there the effect of forbearance has been picked up by MEA. As you might recall, Carlos reading that letter right after forbearance resolution passed, and several of our colleges and universities then opened their hiring policies to persons who would identify as LGBTQ.
So is this part of that same conversation? And I haven't heard this used for a while, but I remember a couple of years ago, people were throwing the words around, like, why don't we just call ourselves a network instead of a denomination? And what those words mean to each person, I guess, is open for interpretation. But is it more kind of that direction that we're moving?
Well, or we're recognizing that's what we are.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. I mean, whether it's moving or not, maybe it's always been some of that because we've never had the authority to tell conferences what to do. Like for me to tell conference ministers, although in some views I'm over all the conference ministers, if I would try to enforce that and tell them what to do, there would be a great laughter in the room. And I was in Kansas this weekend and used the illustration, it would be like if the local pastor, either one of you and your elders, told a family in your congregation, you may not let your children play sports on Sunday mornings and miss church. And they would look at you and say, oh yeah, watch us.
Right.
Right?
Or they just say goodbye. There's a nice church down the road that's not going to say that to us.
So it's a similar thing that you have ideas and understandings of what they should be doing, but you don't really have any way to do that, any authority to do that. You could excommunicate them or take them off the membership list if they're indeed members, but it's a nuclear option that very few congregations have practiced in recent years.
So what do we think this does when we think of our identity as, so I'm putting ourselves in the place of people that are on the fence of, like, do I want to remain affiliated with MCUSA? Do I want to remain affiliated with Ohio Conference? And that conversation has been happening for years.
Right.
Does this freak that out, that conversation out more, or is it relax the conversation and say, my identity is not in, I mean, it's not a denomination in that sense, and so they can do what they want, I just need to worry about what we're doing? Or is it gonna say, oh, if Mennonite Church USA is saying this, then they've gone this, they're just going even further in this direction and we're out of here? I mean, how do you think that affects that conversation?
Well, I don't really have a crystal ball there, but
if you would, it would be really helpful.
But what I imagine will happen, it will increase the identity at the regional level, the conference.
Right.
That will be crystallized more clearly, and even in some of our conversations, we realize with the conference ministers that this kind of movement will mean that transferring credentials from one conference to another will not be nearly as automatic as it was, because it'll be put through a different kind of test of saying, well, we want to do this ourselves, because they would have a different understanding than we would.
Yeah.
Right? So,
sure.
And that will increase the the local identity at the regional level, I think.
And maybe then convention would be a little more like Mennonite World Conference, which is more of a Thanksgiving dinner party, right? Than it is, I mean, no decisions are made there.
Right. Very few. They're made before in the executive council of that gets not nearly the press that we do when we have several thousand.
Yes, right.
Right.
Yeah. So this all sounds to me like what we learned, we heard from Alan and Deborah Hirsch at our missional conference before ACA here in Ohio Conference about centered set and bounded set. This kind of sounds to me like recognizing that while many want us to be a bounded set, and part of our documentation sort of leaned that way, but in reality, we're really more centered set anyway, and maybe we ought to just intentionally be that way.
Mm-hmm. And the Future Church Summit, I think, is the closest thing we have to be able to articulating together what's at the center. I mean, we can talk about Jesus at the center, but when we talk about the ethics of how are we going to follow Jesus today as Anabaptists, hopefully we can paint that picture in a winsome, clear way that becomes that center of who we are instead of what we're against.
Right, right. Well, that's probably enough.
Got to listen to this podcast a couple times to digest everything Terry gave us.
Well, there you go. You wanted content, you got content. Here we go. Terry Hsu, everybody.
Yeah. Well, it's good being with you, too.
Yeah.
Thanks for your time. Appreciate what you're doing at Ohio Conference.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And thanks to our listeners for being a part of our conference cast today. And we'll catch you down the road.
Thanks for listening to the Ohio Conference cast. We would like to hear from you. You can email us at ohioconferencecast@gmail.com with any topics or questions you would like us to explore.